here. It's something which I was here. How many years ago? You made a Sheva Brachos then at the time?
Engerman.
But you also, you went to Sheva Brachos. It was your own children, maybe? Or you had some simcha at your house? I remember Friday night we went off to a family. They were making Sheva Brachos. Like that, whatever. So it was very, very. I was kind of amazed at the scope of the operation here, and everything goes on here. So
it's grown since then.
Yeah. So I just want to. It's amazing to be in and see so much blossoming and so on. I mean, I know there are a lot of voices about the end of outreach and Baruch Hashem. It's something that's really, really amazing. So, Yashar Koach. I wasn't quite sure. One of the things is when you want to address something that's theoretical, theories are theoretical everywhere. But when you want to speak about something practical, every place has its own dynamics. And since we're speaking for, I guess, it's Tzibur that's very personally involved here, I'll speak about something which I guess I can relate to myself. I'm in the teaching profession, and some of the issues and problems dovetail in terms of personal inspiration, in terms of burnout, and in the big picture, and so on. And I want to speak about a certain angle of it, a certain nekuda, and maybe some approach that would work for us. I want to start, first of all, with an interesting parasha in the Torah. Avraham Avinu was the first marbitz das Hashem, and avas Hashem, yiras Hashem, Torah, and so on. And Avram was very disappointed. He told HaKadosh Baruch Hu, matitan li, and the Mesek Beis is the one that's going to to yashin me. Again, how am I with Hebrew and Yiddish words? Okay, or the Olam is okay with, or if there are any words. So if you can cue me, what needs the translation? I don't want to do Moses. my sense is that's not where we're at here. So, but I do. Okay, good. So it says by Avraham Avinu told the Kodesh Baruch Hu, I am, what are you giving me? It's worthless because Damesek Basi is the one who is my Damesek Basi facilities manager, is the one who is going to inherit me. And what's the point of it? Now, Rashi says Damesek. Yeah. The servant Eliezer. I took a liberty. It's not the Oscar translation. I'm sorry. I took some liberty with that one. And what's the point of it? He's going to Yashmi. So one assumes this. It's a pejorative term, kind of. Eliezer is not a great, especially great person. He's a grandson of Canaan. Nothing special. Chazal Darshan Damesk Eliezer is Dole Umashkim Tohos of Shorabo. He's somebody who gave over his Rebbe's Torah. Dola Mashke is very positive terms. He draws deep from his master's Torah and dispenses it. So I understand you want a child, but he's putting him down. He's saying, all you give me is Eliezer, who is what? A great Talmud who gives everything and speaks to everyone. So what's the problem over there? And yes, I want a child instead. Well, where's that coming? Was a child going to do more than Eliezer? That's a point that I think is going to be it's going to be revealing in terms of where we're supposed to be headed, where we're supposed to be going with it. I want to make another point about teaching, about being Marbitz Torah in general. There's Torah Shebiksav and Torah Shebal Peh. We have Torah that's written, 24 Sfarim, and we have Torah that's oral. There are a lot of practical reasons why Torah could not have been all written down. Simply because just the volume of it, the seeming endlessness of it, every generation brings more and more Sfarim that are Torah. They are Torah Shebal Peh, that's what they are. They're a constant development of more questions, more insights, back again questions and so on. But I would like to understand that Torah, the reason it's given in two parts, is not just for the sake of practicality. Torah Shesam Tashem, but there's way too much written in Chazal about the extra qualities of Torah Shebal Peh. It says it's a bris asher karasi al pi advar me'ela, the covenant that I forged based on these words. And Chazal say words means oral expression rather than written. The forging of the covenant of Torah was more on the Baal Peh than on the Iksav. So if Torah Shebaal Peh is just kind of the leftover stuff that couldn't fit into the books, it's hard to say that that's where he would forge a covenant with. He would forge a covenant with the written word. And yes, there's spillover in what can't be written down. There are many Chazal where it's clear that there are certain elements of Torah Shebaal Peh, the oral law, that supersede the written law in significance and importance and so on. So we're going to try to explore a little bit what is the what's the process of giving over Torah, and by giving over Torah I mean the process of inspiring, the process of transmitting the belief, the sense of it, and the identification with it. There's an Orach Chaim, and he says as follows. It's a pasuk at the end. It's a group of psukim at the end of Baloscha, where HaKadosh Baruch Hu speaks to Moshe, and to Aaron, and to Miriam, and explains to them how could they belittle Moshe. They accused Moshe of leaving his wife for no good reason, and so on. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu explains to them in a very stern way the difference between Moshe Rabbeinu's prophecy and their prophecy. Moshe stands in a class of his own. And he describes it. And he says the following. He says, Lo kein avdu, he says like this. As far as all other prophets, Shimon Advarai, Hashem says, listen to what I have to say. Im yia neviachem, Hashem b'mara elav esvada. If you have a prophet, I, Hashem, will appear to him in a vision. I'll speak to him in a dream. Not so Moshe, who is trusted in my entire, quote-unquote, house. In other words, in all of HaKadosh Baruch Hu has, Moshe is trusted totally. I will speak to mouth to mouth. Umara v'lo b'chidos. He will see it plainly and not in riddles. I want to zero in on the word which Orchai Makadosh does. What does it mean, pe el pe adaber? When I speak to somebody directly, I assume he's listening with his ears, not with his mouth. What does it mean, mouth to mouth? It's mouth to ear. If I want to contrast it with a vision where you see something, you're not sure what you're seeing, you can say, I explicitly tell him everything. A prophet has a vision, and it implies certain things. Moshe is told, and it's explicit. But what does it mean? What's the metaphor mouth to mouth? So the Orach Chaim says here something that's really extraordinary. He says, "V'digdek loma el peh v'lo l'ozen." The pasuk is very specific when it says mouth to mouth, and not mouth to ear. Hamaskel advar novi she'ama leiv shomea yodea sora dava. When if you can pick up the words in Malachim, it says a heart that listens, you'll understand what I mean. Vizui, it's as follows: hadarga nevua, hadargas nevua she'ein lemal mimenu. It is a level of prophecy that is superseded by none. Sheyikshar Hashem nefesh navi b'mikor haminabe. It's as if the soul of the prophet becomes bound up with the source of prophecy, which is God. V'yeshalshol hanevuah peh el peh, and the nevuah gets transmitted mouth to mouth. Ubazeh gamkin tovin omra dabe bo. It says I don't speak to him, but I speak through him, in him. That's the Orach Chaim. So if I can use a mashal, a bit of a contemporary mashal for a chayim, when you try to record something from a record, a cassette, or whatever, you can play the tape or whatever you have and have a microphone and record it. That recording is okay, good, sometimes very good. You can take a cable and record, signal to signal. That, in a certain sense, is perfect because it hasn't gone through the other instrument's reception process and then processed by it with all the little issues that crop up with it. It goes straight from point to point. The mouth of a person is the place of life. And breathing, halachically, breathing is what determines a person's life, and therefore his nose and mouth are vayipach ba'apav, means whatever it is that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, however he gave life, it's described as something coming from the mouth. There's an expression in the Zohar, which the Tanya brings, and not clear, it's funny, many bring it, it's not the exact way, the Zohar says it, but it's become a stock expression. Man de nofach midilei nofach. When you breathe out, you're breathing out yourself. It's not, when you do an action, it is of you, from you. When you breathe, that is self, because that's as close to the life force of a person as you can get. So when it says Vayipach Be'apov, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did an act that was called not forming, not even creating, but exhaling into, breathing into, that is an act of giving something as close from the source as possible, as directly as possible. Everything God made is because He decided and wanted to make it, and so on. But if to ask ourselves what represents most closely the essence, Kaviyachol Vakadosh Baruch Hu, it's a person's life. Because the terminology used to describe that is it came from the mouth of HaKadosh Baruch Hu into that. The Vayipach Be'apov is so HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives life. When we resuscitate someone, and we also use a mouth-to-mouth, even though today the other form of CPR, but we need to give a person oxygen, breathing down is the way we do it. The Navi, it says by Elisha, when he revived the Ben Ashunamis, it says that he put his body in his body and his mouth in his mouth. So the Rabag and the Mitzuda say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was the Navi was as if giving some of his life into the other life. If I can give another muscle that's used in Chazal, it's like when you light a candle from a candle, it's not a step from a step, you're sort of taking its heat and igniting your thing as well. So we have an extraordinary process that is the process of a transmission. You can transmit things from output to input to output to input. And that's sort of like, that loses something to step. And then you can sort of attach the essence to the essence. And it just like you'd move over an entire hard drive with a cable to another hard drive, and you get a replica of the first one because it is the first one. Those are two ways of doing it. Anything that goes through the process, through that direct process, is... That's dibur at its best, and that's why Torah Shebal Peh is superior in that way to Torah Shebiksav, because anything that's written tends to be more precise, and its advantage is its precision. There's a clarity when you see something in writing. It's clear. It can be clear. It can be sharp, precise. It lasts. It doesn't. It has many, many pluses. The one thing it doesn't have is you can't breathe that life into the recipient. You can write a book that's powerful, that's moving, that's informing, but there's something about inspiration, like when you when somebody inspires, it's almost as if he's breathing life into you. I want to use a phrase that's always has moved me tremendously. Revolba was a big Baal Musar in Eretz Yisrael, and again, if you're not familiar with the names, please tell me. It's nice to know who one's talking about. He was a German student. He was a Baal Tshuva before he invented the term. His parents, his father was actually Reform. His mother was, I think, more traditional. He was a student at a university with very little education, and then came to the Mir. A friend of his dragged him to the Mir Yeshiva. His life was changed by Rabbi Yerucham. He was a Talmud 2 or 3 years by Rabbi Yerucham. Rabbi Yerucham passed away. He learned a little longer than the yeshiva. He ended up in Eretz Yisrael, had a yeshiva, and the last decade, two decades of his life, he basically spoke in many places. He was a big Baal Musar, an extraordinary speaker, thinker, very, very extraordinary person. And in his first sefer that he wrote in Ali Shur, he writes, he actually was written anonymously at the time, and he writes about himself sort of in third person. He says, the author of this book was a young boy when by chance came into the presence of the great teacher of Yerucham, and he describes him. The description of him is Mechaya Mesim B'Ma'amoro, someone who could resurrect dead people with his words. It's a takeoff from Rashi, Mechaya Mesim B'Ma'amoro. But that description to me was so extraordinary. In other words, his words had the power to breathe life in you. That's a koach that is the essence of Torah, because in as much as Torah is something living, it will only be able, you can only communicate that spark of life when from life itself. And that's why all amount of books are wonderful, videos are wonderful, everything is wonderful. But to light that light, to give over the neshama of Torah, it's only with diburim. And because that's the way it is. If the pale pal dababoy is the process that allows it to happen.
Why isn't that the written word taking place of that? The written word, let's say, was originally spoken. The person can be really inspired by reading something in a sefer. It's not possible.
You can be inspired
by a spoken word.
But it pushes a person. It moves a person, and it can have some of the qualities. But I honestly don't think that it has the quality of the person himself. I as a side remark, not relevant to the main thrust of what was speaking about. I once heard. Some event happened at Israel many years ago in our neighborhood, a terrible tragedy, a human tragedy, and we had a few big rabbanim come and address the Olam. Rav Gifta said, the tragedy of our generation is that it is mipi sfarim v'lo mipi sofrim. It's everybody learns from books, but you don't have that contact with Rosh Hashiva that you had, where you could learn the intangibles. And he said, In tells, if Gifta had this very stern voice, in tells, he said, the Rav had a house, and there were two entrances. When you came to speak to him a learning, which was usually what you did, was you came through the entrance to his study, and that was that. Then every so often, once, twice a year, you would come to visit him, you would come into the house, and you got to see the Rosh Hashiva as the head of a household, not just as a and he said, we don't have it today, and that's why it's a piece of Seferim. There's just it's true that some people have more of a koach that they can give some of it, that's true, but again, it's at the end of the day, there's something about human contact that is unique, and I think it comes from here. This is the marker, this is the idea we're talking about.
So that would justify that videos and audio cassettes don't take the place of hearing it directly from the person, even if you hear the same words, even if you see the face.
Correct. Even if you see the face. Unless, if the person is talking directly to you, in other words, it is a conversation to you, so maybe a video could do it, Skype could do it, because there's a certain imminence where we're connecting. When I speak into, I do some shurim online, and they told me actually at Eish that I should always have a person sitting there. They said it is very different when somebody is sitting and you're talking to him or you're talking to a thing. You know, it's true. There's a chibur. The flip side, I know, I guess as an aside, I know how I could meander a bit. We had a neighbor in America. Growing up on the Lower East Side, my father was a shamus of a shul. My father had learned yeshivas. He was ben Torah. He war survivor. He lost family war. But at any rate, I grew up on the Lower East Side, and there were tens and tens and tens of thousands of families. Most of them, I guess, Orthodox by a klirishin or klisheni kind of. They were cooked in an Orthodox pattern. That's why they were Orthodox, basically. their parents or grandparents were Orthodox. They had very little education, very little emotional contact, but they were, you know, fairly practicing. There was one person who lived across the street from the shul. He would come into the shul quite often, daven. He had been an officer, a Prussian officer. If anybody knows what Prussia is, Prussia was part of Germany, the spitzy part of Germany before Germany was Germany. And he was an officer, Prussian officer in World War I, and also university educated, which was quite accomplished for a person. And he was, you know, part of shul. He would come to shul, but he was not terribly believing or anything. And he told my father, you know, he comes sometimes, sits in a shiurim, doesn't see the point of them. The rabbis quibble about a penny here, a penny there, this and that. And so my father didn't have, my father was a friend. He was very nice. They're very nice people, aristocratic people, but he wasn't going anywhere. At the age of 80, he wasn't going anywhere. And one day I told my father, but if you really want to see something that's emes, you know, come with me Friday night. The Kapishnitzer Rebbe had a tish on the Lower East Side. He had a little shtiebel. Yeah, the shtiebel was a dump someplace, a basement somewhere. Believe me, there was nothing going on much. My father said, fine. He was curious to see who was this. Either this person must be the tremendous intellectual or great, magnificent art or whatever it is that's taking this man. And they come into a basement someplace, to a shabby little basement, and there's a dozen people sitting around a table. Prichnitzer Rebbe had a tremendous hadas upon him. He was a malachdika person. He really was somebody very unique. But the tish, some father described to me, there were 14, 15 people sitting around a table, drinking a little beer and singing a few nagunim. And the Rebbe spoke very softly and, you know, it just was very not my father's style. At any rate, when they walk back home, he turns to my father and says, nope, now you see what I mean? And my father was stunned. But there was something there. There was something in the presence of a person who was Eish Kodesh, who had that to himself, that there was a certain pel peh that came by. And it doesn't take the place of doing it pel ozen, but pel ozen doesn't always take the place of that either. Reb Noach was very, I taught Neshtar for 7 years. Reb Noach was very, very insistent on learning for the arguments and 48 ways and this and that. And that's what, and he would attribute his success to that. I once told him, Reb Noach, with all due respect, if you would read the phone book out loud, you would probably makar 50% of the people do anyway. I said, it has a lot more to do with you than the arguments and everything else. When people met Reb Noach, there was a feeling, if there's a sneb boer, this is it. In terms of many parts of himself, and in terms of the passion, in terms of the goodness, in terms of the godliness, and you know, the those were things that were that was his chiyus. Let's go back to the point, I guess, where we were trying to go to. So if we're talking about a unique element that is absolutely not only necessary, but it's the essence of a person who is being marbitz Torah, who's reaching out, who this is his metzias, it's going to be the metzias of chiyus. If the person's, what? A chiyus. A certain sense of living, livelihood, living it, and so on. I want to describe a difference between, what's the difference between things that are animate and inanimate? Many, many differences. They would drill into my head in general science, and I can probably go through them again, locomotion, respiration, and so on. But the really, if now that we're alumni, we'll go back to it as alumni. The difference between something animate and inanimate is an inanimate thing exists today because it existed yesterday. Why is this rock here? Because nobody bothered to remove it. That's the only reason for it. It exists because it exists. If something outside will change, it'll change. If somebody is living, the answer of why he's alive today is not because he was alive yesterday. The body is constant flux, and if the body stops, it's dead. It needs a reason now, because cells are manufacturing this, taking it this, getting rid of that, and so on. So the animate is there because of the now, and not because of the yesterday. If that's it, in Torah you find the word mayim chayim, living water, quote-unquote, means a stream that's in constant motion, as opposed to something that is in one place. Something in one place is fixed. The waters that were here yesterday are here today, and they will probably be here tomorrow. A mayim chayim is water that is constantly flowing. What's here now was not here yesterday, and won't be here tomorrow, and won't be in a minute from now. The life is something which is going to be changing constantly. If a person's Yiddishkeit is described as living, it can't be living off what was yesterday. In other words, if a person does not continue to grow himself, and now in terms of keeping mitzvahs, I mean, basically we're all keeping tayag mitzvahs, we can do better a lot, but that's not really, for most of us who are pretty much there, that's not where it's going to go. It will probably be in the realm of studying, of Torah. It's one of the things, and I can tell you as a teacher, the Yetzirah is to spend any spare time that you have, and precious little of it, to prepare.